a great land. Those among the people, those who have initiatives to offer, those who have new notions in mind, these individuals are countless in this land. When you speak with someone, you come across new thoughts and notions and ideas. And you're amazed by such new notions and ideas by people from different walks of life. I can refer to suggestions and initiatives made in written form, and what they say in person, what they say in protest, and what they say in the form of a suggestion or a proposal. All these are promising because indicate new initiatives, a good experience, this is a feature of this land. This is a great national wealth that must be used. I call upon the administration and the president to benefit from this great public capacity and use this in order to realize their goals. Of course, we do have material assets that are ample. I can refer to our natural resources. And these resources are abundant, much more than what we have already made use of. We can have great accomplishments by relying on our natural and human resources that requires a firm resolve and perseverance and being steadfast in pursuing our goals and actually choose capable colleagues. The next recommendation is about jihadi activities. There should be a jihadi spirit, and in this way, major hardships can be removed. That means to be indefatigable and to work hard and to fulfill the duties and making progress. Of course, there are legislative frameworks and administrative frameworks that must be observed, but a jihadi work is what matters with respect to jihadi activities is the quality. You can act lawfully in both jihadi and non-jihadi forms. There are many who observe the rules and regulations, but no progress is made. A few days ago, the president mentioned this. There's a person who is in charge in a department, but his productivity and efficiency is low. I mean, the final product is not useful. And that is true. Through jihadi activities. We have had major achievements, and the 8 years of holy defense took place through jihadi activities and countering various and intricate conspiracies by the enemy. Countering all these and through jihadi activities, all these plots were nullified in about 30 or 40 years. And that was my next recommendation. Martyr Raisi was a man of jihadi work, and he truly worked round the clock, day and night. And he was not expecting any admirations for his activities. This is something I truly felt. And he worked hard in a true sense, and he made his utmost efforts. And some people were not aware of some of these activities. But he did work hard. So one should engage in jihadi activities and also and refraining from remote controlling. It's not possible to have remote controlling of the activities. They should be the next recommendation is about interaction amongst the country's pillars. The parliament must help the government. The government must count on the sensitivities of the parliament. The judiciary must be present, must be actively present, whatever necessary. When the people, the government are in need of something, the armed forces must play their role, and they should all play their role. And the sessions of the heads of the three branches of the establishment are good opportunities and chances. And I've recommended this to the previous presidents, and I'm recommending this again in this meeting, that the meetings, they should take serious the meetings of the heads of the three branches of the establishment. And this has been our experience, and we have benefited from this for years. And we should also consider the priorities. I'm very sensitive towards cultural matters. I mean, social and cultural matters, these are important issues, and they are of paramount importance, but today priority should be given to economic issues. There's a need for certain economic moves. Some measures have been taken by the previous administration. Those have been valuable activities, but this process must continue. The issue of the value of the national currency, production, investment, improving the business environment. These are the essential and general issues in the area of economy. And also, this is a short-term and immediate task to improve people's livelihood. Some measures can be taken, and they will hopefully be taken. The next recommendation is related to the public emotions related to elections and actually addressing the people and the social activists and so on. The elections are challenging, normally challenging. There are people on both sides, some challenges may be created, and one should not pay attention to temptations for bipolarization. This is my explicit recommendation. The emotions at the time of the elections that lead to argumentation, such emotions must not continue. Do not allow these emotions to continue. This is a property of the elections. One will win over the other. And that's what the elections mean. You like someone and he will win, and there's another person, somebody else likes him and he will not win. This is quite natural. This must not lead to a rift or disunity. There are various tastes and orientations in the Islamic Republic of Iran, and that has existed since the triumph of the revolution. Some, and there are people who have won in the elections, and there have been ups and downs, and this is a test. And the Iranian nation has always emerged victorious in all these elections. No one has lost. And those who have supported a candidate, and the candidate has not won in the elections, they have not lost. And they are also part of this nation. They have also emerged victorious. So that feeling of displeasure that may have occurred in the course of electoral argumentations, that must not continue. The one whose candidate has won, he should not feel being superior to the other. And the one whose candidate has lost, he should not have the feeling of failure. And this is another recommendation. This recommendation addresses all social political activists. My next recommendation is about being thankful towards domestic capabilities. And I'm actually addressing the officials and authorities who are tasked with directing the country in the path of progress. One should attach importance to domestic capabilities. And this must be an everlasting motto, that we can. And that's the reality. This doesn't mean that we should not use other capabilities, external capabilities. Even sometimes our enemies may act in a way that would be to our benefit. We should make use of it. But one should not overlook domestic capabilities, and you should not tie something. We should not tie a domestic issue to a foreign matter. Do whatever you can, whatever that brings about dignity. But one should not overlook domestic capabilities. And there are many examples in this regard. My next recommendation is about issues related to foreign policy. The first point I wish to mention about foreign policy is that there should be an active approach towards developments unfolding at the regional and global levels. We should not act in a passive manner. There are many issues, political issues, scientific issues, also extraordinary scientific initiatives like artificial intelligence. These are things happening in the world. We should act in an active manner. We should have an active, we should have an influential approach. One should not be negligent, and whatever happens, we should have a standpoint, and we should express our standpoint, and the whole world must know what our standpoint is. The 13th administration had good accomplishments. I can refer to Martyr Amir Abdullahian. He was a good diplomat and negotiator. He was hardworking, and I could see his activities, and he worked well, and these hard works must continue. And we do have priorities in foreign policy. One of our priorities is our neighbors. We are among countries that have many neighbors. That's a privilege. We have almost 14 countries neighboring us. That's a privilege, an advantage. We should work on our interaction with the neighboring countries. Another priority is working with countries that can expand the domain of our foreign policy, like African states. They can expand, and priority should be given to contacts with these countries. Another priority is working with countries that have supported us in the face of pressures at the UN and in other arenas. They have had economic cooperation with us. They have supported us, and we should further reinforce our relations with them. And similar priorities. I did not mention European countries as a priority. We are not in a state of enmity with them. The reason why I don't mention European countries as priority is that they have not acted, they have not behaved properly with us in the past few years. In the case of the sanctions, the oil, and other issues, and they have not acted and behaved properly in cases such as human rights. If they refrain from such behaviors, they will be also given priority. They will be given priority. Of course, there are a few countries, and we will not forget their hostile approaches. And these were my recommendations. And the last point I wish to mention is about Gaza. This is a global issue. The issue of Palestine used to be an issue related to Islamic lands, but today this is a general issue for the whole world, and from inside the U.S. Congress to the U.N. and the Paris Olympics and many other places, you can see that this is a matter that has been disseminated everywhere. The Zionist regime is presenting the ugliest image of a criminal ring. This is not a government, it's a criminal ring, a ring of murderers, a terrorist ring. Speaking of acts of terror, atrocity, and criminality, severe criminalities, and they have actually, the Zionist regime has registered a new record in criminality. The Zionist bombs are being dropped over the heads of those that have not even fired a single bullet. I'm referring to children in cradles, 5-year-old, 6-year-old children, women and patients in hospitals. They have not fired even a single bullet, and bombs are dropped over them. Why? This is an unprecedented crime. The power of resistance is becoming more clear on a daily basis, and the Zionist enemy, despite the aid by the U.S. and the aid provided by some treacherous governments, the Zionist regime has failed to defeat the resistance forces, and they said that they want to uproot Hamas, but today Hamas, jihad, and the resistance in general in Palestine are resisting with full force, and they can do nothing. They cannot do anything against them, and that's why they drop bombs on the innocent people of Gaza. The world must adopt a most serious decision. The world must adopt a most serious decision. The governments, the nations, and scholarly figures, politicians, and the day before yesterday, that was a big shame for the U.S. Congress that heard what was said, and the Congress members listened to what was said by that criminal there. May God help the people of Palestine, contributing to their victory, and may God help the Iranian, demotivated and great Iranian nation to realize their goals. And I pray to God Almighty to help our new and dear president and the administration that will take shape. May God assist them all. Hopefully they will be able to realize their goals and contribute to the honor of the Iranian nation. I also commemorate and salute the pure souls of the late Imam, Lieutenant General Soleimani and Martyr Raisi. And I hope that God would also make us join the caravan of the martyrs.
This is Tehran, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Well, you have just listened to our live coverage of an inauguration ceremony, an endorsement ceremony for Iran's newly elected president, Masoud Pezeshkian. And just a quick recap of the main points made by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, and president, new president, Masoud Pezeshkian. The leader said that, "I call upon President Pezeshkian to use all those with new initiatives, with new notions in their mind, with new ideas." He strongly urged President Pezeshkian to use people who had new initiatives and new ideas, had innovative ideas. He also said that one of the priorities of the new government must be to improve people's livelihood. He also said that the new government must have an active foreign policy and must do everything it can to further Iran's relations with neighboring countries and with the wider world. He also said the new government must make use of domestic capabilities within Iran. He said this is very important. And the leader also emphasized that he said, "I call on the new government to pursue crucial issues with perseverance and steadfastness." As far as Europe was concerned, leader said, "We do not consider European countries as hostile, although some European countries have acted in not an appropriate way in relation to us." He also said that the Zionist regime of Israel represents the ugly face of terrorism. He said the Zionist regime has set a new record in terms of criminality. The new Iranian president, Masoud Pezeshkian, he said, Masoud Pezeshkian said, "I will serve the people with everything I have." He said, "I thank all political figures and the people of Iran for their sizable turnout, massive turnout in the recent presidential elections." He thanked the people for their turnout in the elections. He said, "The leader, by endorsing me, has placed a heavy responsibility on my shoulders." And he said his top priority is to serve the people of Iran. That has been our live coverage. We now go back to our regular programming.
Because of today is...
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters,
11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabic English Radio via your mobile.
This is Tehran, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Well, we've just had our live coverage of an inauguration ceremony, endorsement ceremony for Iran's newly elected president, Masoud Pezeshkian. Now we go over to Press TV headquarters for our political discussion with political analyst, a professor at Tehran University, Fuad Izadi, talking about the inauguration ceremony for President Masoud Pezeshkian. Let's listen in.
Where we have current and former Iranian officials present, the ambassadors of foreign countries are sitting in the audience. This is something that Iran does every 4 years. We are doing it 1 year early because the sad demise of President Raisi.
So when you have all these officials there from Iran, and you have many notable high-ranking officials, along with obviously Iran's leader endorsing Dr. Pezeshkian, so we can take a look at that to mean that there's a rallying support, obviously, for Dr. Pezeshkian. What do you think would be the expectations? Iran's leader mentioned that people's livelihoods should be at the top of the list in terms of, I guess that would mean the economy. Are the expectations so high as to give enough window for Dr. Pezeshkian to make sure that he, brings about some tangible results?
You know, of course, expectations are high, and this is due to the election. You know, when candidates run for office in Iran and elsewhere, they make promises, and it's expected that they fulfill these promises. One thing about Iranian democracy is that we had a peaceful transfer of power. The organizations that conducted the election did not come from the same political party as Mr. Pezeshkian. They belong to President Raisi's administration, but this is how Iran's democracy works, that the people who are conducting the election actually hand over power to the other party in Iran peacefully, and all other candidates congratulated Mr. Pezeshkian, and I think everybody in Iran is going to try to help the new administration so Mr. Pezeshkian can fulfill the promises that he made, because everybody realizes that if Mr. Pezeshkian succeeds, it's going to beneficial the whole country and everybody, whether they voted for him or not. So overall, I think this is a celebration of democracy in Iran. We used to have a kingdom. The name of the king was Shah, and he was a brutal dictator, and he was running the country because he was the son of the previous king. So for Iran, in the last 45 years, experiencing democracy, experiencing a republic, is relatively something new, and so people are proud of it. This came with a lot of difficulties. Iran's enemies, United States, Israel, and the media outlets that get funding from these governments, asked Iranians to boycott the election. U.S. has put a lot of pressure on Iranian people through sanctions, hoping for overthrowing the Iranian government, and having someone like the king that we had to rule the country again. You know, in UK, they had an election the day before Iran's election. And no one in the world, including Press TV, no one asked the British people not to participate in elections, which is not the case for Iran. All Persian-speaking television stations that are funded by countries like UK and US and Israel asked Iranians not to go to the polls. So when you manage to have a peaceful election in the manner that Iran had, it is a huge success. And this is a celebration of Iran's democracy. And the hope is that the new administration will be able to work in a manner that satisfies the people that voted for Mr. Pezeshkian and others that did not vote for him.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much. Fouad Azadi, professor at the University of Tehran. Thank you so much for your thoughts. With the News Half Hour blocking our Press TV, let's begin with some news. More Palestinians have fallen victim to air.
This is Tehran, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Well, you've just listened to our political analyst, a professor at Tehran University, Fouad Azadi, giving his analysis about the inauguration ceremony, endorsement ceremony for Iran's new president, Masoud Pezeshkian. We now go over to our regular programming. Well, you've just heard our analysis of the inauguration ceremony in Tehran for President Masoud Pezeshkian. We now go over to our regular programming.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahan Abbott, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
In the port of Hodeidah in western Yemen, the Ministry of Human Rights, the Ministry of Oil and Minerals, and local authorities held a press conference under the theme Zionist Aggression Against Yemen and Continued International Spectatorship. The event focused on the recent Israeli attack on oil tanks in the port, which tragically claimed the lives of 9 civilians and injured over 80 others. The press conference highlighted the importance of the port for millions of Yemenis and condemned the Israeli aggression, stating that the port is a civilian facility protected under international law and should not be targeted by any party.
This is the site of the crime committed by the Israeli regime, bombing a civilian oil facility protected under international law. More than 20 raids destroyed all the tanks in the port of Hodeidah, exacerbating the suffering of citizens. We have 9 martyrs and 83 wounded in this crime, and the number of the dead is likely to increase as most of the injuries are serious. Unfortunately, dozens of people are still missing under the rubble, and rescue teams have been unable to recover their bodies.
Regarding the power station and the firefighting efforts, things went well. The Ministry of Oil and the Ministry of Electricity confirmed that there was no need for concern. What happened was just a show by Israel and an attempt to directly harm the Yemeni people.
Officials assert that Israel's aggression is a clear violation of Yemen's sovereignty and a threat to the people's safety, as well as the flow of goods to millions of civilians. Nevertheless, the people here remain steadfast, expressing their full support for the Yemeni army's resistance against the Israeli regime. Abdul Latif Al-Washali from Hodeidah Port.
We are in the port of Hodeidah, which is the site of an Israeli airstrike that targeted Yemen's fuel and diesel storage tanks earlier this week. The area is a haunting scene of devastation, with twisted and mingled metal pieces and charred remains of storage tanks. The sharp stench of burning oil can still be felt in the surrounding. However, despite the destruction inflicted by the Israeli attack, the port of Hodeida remains fully operational, according to the governor.
As you can see, despite the misleading reports from pro-Israeli media, the port of Hodeida stands resilient. Within a mere 24 hours after the attack, it was back in full operational mode. We will rebuild and reconstruct. They won't be successful in getting rid of this port. However, by the will of Allah, we will indeed get rid of Israel.
People of Hodeida also have strongly condemned the attacks. They say Israel is attempting to destroy Yemen's civilian infrastructure to cause widespread fuel and gas shortages across the country.
Today we send a message to Israel and America, and we tell them that your attacks on the port of Hodeida and the fuel storage tanks will not impact us in any way. They want us to discontinue attacks on Israel, but our operations will continue until they stop attacking Palestinians.
There are no fuel shortages. As you can see, cars and motorbikes are running comfortable. By the grace of Allah, fuel and everything are available.
Ansarullah officials say the government has taken all necessary measures to ensure that even in a case of a full-scale war with Israel, Yemenis will never have to experience another humanitarian crisis. According to Ansarullah, the only thing Israel is able to hit is civilian infrastructure and civilian facilities. This is due to Israel's failure to locate and identify where and how the Yemeni army is launching attacks that have hit the heart of the Israeli regime. Yusuf Maudi, the port of Hodeida.
Ahmet Yıldız, Turkey's envoy to the UN, has raised the alarm over the dire humanitarian situation in Syria as he addressed the Security Council on Monday. Yıldız expressed concern over the situation in northeastern Syria, accusing the US-backed PKK, YPG and SDF of pursuing a separatist agenda. He called on the international community to oppose such plans.
As part of the overall effort to resolve the conflict, the preservation of the territorial integrity and political unity of Syria is of paramount importance for the future of the country and the region. Having said that, the PKK, YPG, and so-called SDF terrorist organization tries to advance its separatist agenda in Syria through all possible means in contravention of the Security Council Resolution 2254. Also, the terrorist organizations must not be treated as if they were a legitimate actor, as it commits grave human rights violations against local people in northeast Syria and deliberately impeding the delivery of humanitarian aid to the north of the country.
Turkey has consistently warned its allies against supporting terrorist organizations, stressing that the presence of such groups at its borders poses a threat to the country's national security. The issue has strained ties between Ankara and Washington. Analysts argue that U.S. support for militant organizations in northern Syria is more than just backing them to fight Daesh. They believe the move can be aimed at dividing Syria and establishing an autonomous state under the thumb of the U.S.
For 40 years, the Pentagon has been attempting to establish a new Israel in northern Syria and Iraq. The United States has occupied parts of Syria to give legitimacy to this new state. Therefore, Turkey has the right to oppose this plan, but it cannot do so alone. For this reason, Turkey is trying to coordinate with the Syrian government in Damascus, the Iraqi government in Baghdad, and the Iranian government. We must make sure that Washington is not after dividing Syria. Therefore, there must be military resistance to the American presence in the region. Turkey, Syria, and Iraq must establish a military alliance against U.S.-backed forces in order to make Washington withdraw from the region.
Turkey says it has the right to protect its borders from the threat of the separatist group's presence in the neighboring Syria, expressing the will to establish a 30 to 40 kilometer deep security corridor along the border. Ankara launched three cross-border military operations in 2016, 2018, and 2019 in a trial to eliminate the militant groups. As Turkey is voicing serious concerns over the presence of terrorist groups at its borders, experts argue that the country cannot fight the U.S.-backed separatist project in Syria alone. They say in order to achieve security, Ankara needs to join forces and cooperate with the countries in the region, including Syria itself.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
In a significant development for Yemen, the UN envoy to Yemen, Hans Grundberg, announced a breakthrough agreement between the governments of Sana'a and the Saudi-appointed presidential council. The agreement focuses on de-escalating issues related to the banking sector and Yemeni airlines.
We hope, God willing, that this agreement will be a good beginning and a sign that the provisions will be implemented and the humanitarian suffering of the Yemeni people will be alleviated with regard to the airport and flights to multiple destinations. We also hope that suspended salaries will be dispersed and that the economic and humanitarian situation caused by the Saudi-led aggression over the past years be addressed, as Yemen has now taken a strong position in support of Palestine and deserves to be looked into.
A major part of the agreement includes resumption of Yemeni Airlines flights between Sana'a and Jordan. The airline will increase its operations to 3 daily flights and the plans to start flights to Cairo and India either daily or as needed. Meetings are also underway to tackle the administrative, technical and financial challenges facing Yemen Airways.
Certainly, this is an advanced step in the course of the dialogues taking place between Yemen and Saudi Arabia, which wants to shrink its humanitarian obligations by closing the airport and stopping flights of the Yemenis, as well as economic sanctions and preventing banks from operating in Sana'a. We hope that all parties will implement the agreement, especially the Saudi party, which always evades implementing its obligations.
Grundberg has also called for the immediate cancellation of recent decisions and measures taken against banks by both sides. Additionally, the parties have agreed to start discussions on broader economic and humanitarian issues following a designated roadmap.
While observers believe that these steps are crucial for stabilizing Yemen's banking sector and preventing further economic deterioration, people here say this agreement marks a hopeful step forward for Yemen, potentially easing economic pressures and improving travel availability. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
In the lush hills of Kermanshah, 20 kilometers from the Iran-Iraq border, Zardeh village hides a haunting past, a brutal chemical attack that changed lives forever. All this resulted from Saddam Hussein's use of chemical weapons during the Iran-Iraq war. On July 22, 1988, Zardeh village was targeted, leading to numerous casualties. This attack was part of a broader campaign affecting over 100,000 Iranians and leaving countless survivors with lifelong health issues. American, British, German, Italian, and French companies were the ones who supplied Saddam Hussein with the materials needed to produce chemical bombs, facilitating these devastating attacks.
Some European countries in the U.S. not only provided Saddam with the equipment and chemicals to create weapons, but in some cases, they even supplied him with chemical bombs. They supported him on the battlefield against the Iranian nation, while blocking any diplomatic actions against him. Not a single UNSC resolution was passed against Saddam during those 8 years of war. Ironically, these same countries now impose unfair sanctions on Iran, preventing essential medicine from reaching chemical victims. They continue to perpetuate these injustices.
In Zardeh, residents gather to remember the victims, honoring their resilience. As survivors share their stories, the scars of that tragic day remind us of the enduring impact of this crime.
On the anniversary of the chemical attack on Zardeh village, Iranians reflect on a troubling irony, that those who advocate for human rights and impose sanctions on Iran are the same entities that supplied Saddam Hussein with chemical weapons. A hypocrisy that cannot be overlooked. Gisumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
The exercise, known as 2024 Hybrid Maritime Search, Rescue and Security, has been held in Iran's port city of Bandar Anzali. Both maritime and aerial forces of the Iranian Navy have actively participated in the drill. The maneuvers involve different floating and flying units belonging to the Iranian Navy, such as missile launchers, Paykan, Joshan, Derafsh, and Sepher. There are also two 212 AB helicopters and a floating unit of the IRGC Navy. vessels from the Command Navy and Russia's SB-45 vessel have also been part of the exercise.
We have planned a combined rescue and relief exercise with the aim of developing cooperation and improving security. Little countries of the Caspian Sea are participating. Fortunately, today we're starting the exercise in the presence of Caspian countries. A Russian Navy ship is taking part, and the Azerbaijan Republic is supervising the exercise. God willing, this will be a basis for the development of collective cooperation of regional naval forces.
Iran, Russia, and Azerbaijan have established a significant partnership through their joint military exercise in the Caspian Sea. The collaboration is aimed at enhancing their strategic cooperation and strengthening their military capabilities in the region. The exercise involves various activities such as tactical exercises, rescue operations, and procedures to combat piracy, showcasing the level of coordination between the naval units of Iran and Russia.
The purpose of this exercise is to promote interactions and cooperation among the countries bordering the Caspian Sea. The joint drill also aims to use all the capabilities of the Islamic Republic of Iran's naval forces in order to improve the security of commercial shipping lines and increase maritime interactions and diplomacy in the Caspian Sea.
Through this exercise, Iran seeks to demonstrate its abilities to respond effectively to threats and to maintain stability in the region. By showcasing its military capabilities and combat readiness, Iran aims to reassure its allies and deter potential aggressors from escalating tensions. The exercise displays Iran's determination to protect its sovereignty and to defend its interests, while warning those who may seek to undermine the country's status in the region. Iran says its navy is committed to promoting collaboration among the countries bordering the Caspian Sea through these annual exercises with the ultimate aim of ensuring the safety and security of the region. This year's drills are codenamed Together for a Safe and Secure Caspian Sea. Reza Hashemi, Anzali Port.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 35 to 37 of Surah Ali Imran, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dhurriyatan ba'dhuha min ba'dhin wallahu samiyun alim. إذ قالت امرأة عمران رب إني نذرت لك ما في بطني محرما